welcome, everybody, and thanks for joining us for another edition of the Student Press Law Center's monthly podcast. The SPLC is an advocate for the legal rights of student journalists around the country, and we serve as a source of information and advice for folks facing legal challenges when they gather, publish, and distribute news and information. We're talking today about the issue of censorship of student journalists at the high school level, and our guests are involved in a nationally publicized controversy which has sort of captured the imagination of the professional news media because it involves an issue the professional news media is struggling with as well, namely, what happens when a professional sports team is using a mascot which becomes widely believed to be a racial slur, i.e. the Redskins. At the Washington, in Washington, D.C., the professional sports journalism community is struggling with whether to use the name Washington Redskins for the NFL football franchise. Very eminent sports journalists, including Christine Brennan of The Post, Slate Magazine, have all decided they will boycott the name because it's believed to constitute a racial slur. At the high school level, students at Neshaminy High School, northeast of Philadelphia, decided last fall to join in this form of sort of silent protest by banning the phrase Redskins from the pages of their newspaper. Jillian McGoldrick is the editor-in-chief of the Neshaminy High School Play Wiki and the newspaper that came to this decision. She's here with us to talk about how the students decided upon this move, why they did it, and what the fallout has been from their school. Along with her is Gail Spruill. Gail is a partner with the law firm of Levine Sullivan. It is one of the most eminent media law firms anywhere in the country. Gail has been a media lawyer for more than 25 years. In addition to her private practice in the Philadelphia office of Levine Sullivan, she's also been an in-house counsel at NBC Broadcasting. She's a graduate of Villanova Law School, and she took on this case. She and her law firm decided to represent the Playwickian entirely free of charge, pro bono, as part of the SPLC's attorney referral network, for which we are very grateful. And so, Jillian and Gail, I thank you for joining us and welcome you. And let's go ahead and start with Jillian McGoldrick, the editor. Can you sort of just set up for us how it was that the staff, the Playwickian, came to this decision, and how did you let the community know about it? How did you share that decision with your audience?
So a Native American parent within our district filed a complaint against the mascot name, which is the Redskin. And then after we started sort of hearing it and really started to actually listen to what this woman was saying at these school board meetings and just pleading against this mascot name, that's when we decided we should talk about it. And then we through many debates and with a lot of different changing minds, the editorial board of the Playwickian decided with a 14-7 majority to remove the word from the paper. And when we wrote an editorial about this in the October edition of the Playwickian, and we said with the majority view as to why we were taking the word out. And then we also published the dissenting view of the seven who believe that it should stay in.
Yeah. So, all right, so you go ahead and you publish this editorial. You've now declared this position to the community. What is the reaction and response from your school administration?
They were not happy. That would not be the word to describe them at all, actually. A few days after we went to print and we distributed to our school, my advisor received an email with a directive saying that we as the editorial board of the Playwickian cannot deny any advertisements or letters to the editor or any pieces of writing that use the term that we deemed as a racial slur, and that we must publish it and we cannot edit it out as we could any other word that was a racial slur or whatever else.
Right. So, in other words, right, obviously, if somebody turned in a column or a letter that has the N-word spelled out in it, it would have been the policy and the style of the staff not to publish that offensive word. You felt like you were being subjected to a double standard here by being told to publish a word that the majority of the staff had agreed was, in its own way, equivalent to publishing something like the N-word, right?
Exactly, exactly.
So how does this – you receive this instruction from your school administration that says you are to accept this word if anybody submits it in an ad or a column or a letter or any type of an article. How did that go over with your staff, even with the seven people who were in the dissenting view who would have gone ahead and kept the nickname?
We were unanimous after that point, after they said – that we were compelled to publish to anything with the word in it, that wasn't right. And then a few days after, maybe it was even like 2 days after, we received a full-page advertisement that said, this is not a direct quote, but it was something that Redskins is family, Redskins is... Redskins has so many years of tradition, and we were to be publishing that, and we were unanimous that that was not what we wanted to do. And the FPLC and the Journalism Education Association and the Pennsylvania School Press Association all went in and got an awesome advertisement that we put in instead, like to go along with that, with our 12.9 rights.
Yeah, awesome, and so that's actually a good segue to bring in Gail Spruill to talk about. You referred to Section 12.9 of the Pennsylvania Code,
right,
which is a protective measure that Pennsylvania has, along with a handful of other states, that gives students enhanced legal protection above and beyond the bare minimum that is recognized under the First Amendment to the United States Constitution. So Gail, you and your firm have actually prepared and sent a letter to the school administration spelling out for them why a directive compelling these young people at a public institution to publish the editorial content of the administration's choosing, why that runs afoul of state and federal law. So can you sort of lay out for us kind of law 101 here about what laws are implicated by that directive?
I will try, Frank. In a nutshell, and I should say that I think formally the way it stands with the school district now is that the editorial policy is supposed to be on hold. That's the language of the administration. That sort of directive, we believe, violates the U.S. Constitution, the Pennsylvania Constitution, and the state law of Pennsylvania. The Supreme Court has said very famously in the Tinker case, which came out of the Vietnam War and the protests that ensued from the various things that happened in that war, that students don't shed their constitutional rights at the schoolhouse gate. And that is, that is the law of the land. However, there are instances in which, in a very limited set of circumstances, schools can limit speech. And what the court said in the Tinker case is that where some form of speech, or in that case, essentially passive silence, causes substantial disruption or material interference with school activities or to the rights of others, school officials can limit it. What we've said here is, and I should say that's the burden of the school district to prove, what we've said here is there is no material disruption and there is no interference with the rights of others or impact on the rights of others. And we have pointed out that the school, various people at school, including the football coach, who is the coach of the Redskins team, have said there's been no problem at school, and in fact, there's a very positive atmosphere at school. So there's no interference. There's another branch of limitation, which came under the Hazelwood case, in which the court said where school-sponsored speech is at issue, the school district can censor or limit that speech if they can relate that to a legitimate pedagogical interest. What we're saying here is that that doesn't even apply in our case because our students are not trying to say something. They're trying not to say something.
Mm-hmm.
They are, like the students in Tinker and recently in a Third Circuit case that involved the wearing of armbands, this is a silent, passive expression of opinion. And rather than what would be normally the case is, you know, there's some sort of raunchy article or headline or something that the school administrators are trying to put a lid on. That's the opposite of what is happening here. These students are actually attempting to prevent the use of offensive speech. And, you know, in our view, should be applauded for it rather than disciplined or in any way limited. And then there's yet another issue, which is forcing students to use speech that they do not wish to use as something called compelled speech, as Jillian was talking about, which is prohibited. School administrators cannot force students to espouse, you know, the view of the school. And to the extent that they would require the students, and they have not yet done this, but if they were to require the students to use the term Redskins when they have chosen not to, in our view, that is compelled speech. And I should say that the ad that Jillian was talking about was pulled. And then finally, I mean, the Pennsylvania Constitution mirrors the federal Constitution. Some states have even more protective constitutions. But what we have in Pennsylvania is what you were talking about, which is a state code, which essentially gives to student editors, the quote is, they are as free as editors of other newspapers to report the news and to editorialize. And the school district is specifically limited by the code in their review and their restrictions. They can only remove obscene or libelous material and edit other material that would cause substantial disruption of school activities. In other words, they've incorporated the Tinker standard into the state code. So all of these things, all of these sources of authority, in our view, and these laws and these rights that are assured by these laws would be violated if the school district went through with its potential decision. And again, at this point, they haven't done this, but they've suggested that the students must use the word. And the students have decided that they don't want to and that they won't. So that's where we are.
Yeah, so let me ask, there's an argument that is sort of a novel one that we haven't seen a whole lot come up in these situations, and one that the school seems to be hanging a lot of reliance on, which is this idea that there are offsetting First Amendment interests here, that the students who might want to write a column or want to submit a letter or want to purchase an ad using the R word are going to be stopped from doing so by the editor's chosen editorial policy, and that somehow that's a violation of their legal rights and that the school needs to protect their rights. Can you sort of help us understand why that's different, why a decision made by the student editors is not analogous to a decision made by the principal?
I can try. First of all, there's something in the law called state action, which basically has to happen in order for something to be unconstitutional. So a principal and an administrator of a school district is a state actor. An editor, a student editor, is not. So the actions of an editor are not state action, and therefore the students are not able to deprive anybody of their constitutional rights. But, you know, putting that aside for a second, I would like to say that I think there are a couple of flaws in this argument, and one is one interesting aspect to the argument is that I think what the school district is arguing when they say that is that the newspaper is a public forum.
Mm-hmm.
Because if it weren't a public forum, there could be no constitutional rights, you know, that could be deprived. I mean, if it weren't a limited purpose public forum or a public forum. So that to me is a very interesting approach, and I wonder if they're willing to go out and actually say that they believe that's a public forum. I think that would be tremendously helpful to our students.
Sure, right, with all of the protections that adhere to public forum status for a publication.
Yes,
absolutely.
It is the most protected potential, thing. I mean, a public forum is the thing that the First Amendment was essentially designed to protect. But in addition to that, even if it's just a limited purpose public forum, under the Hazelwood case, the school would have the right to change or to prevent the use of an offensive word if it could relate that to a legitimate public pedagogical purpose.
Right.
So what they're saying is that the students, if you want to take their argument to its logical conclusion and say that there are people who, you know, need to be able to write things and say things, and the students are precluding them from doing that, they're actually doing only the thing that the school itself would do if it were actually adhering to its own policies, which prevent the use of offensive words. There's a Neshaminy School District policy that is very clear that students can be punished for using offensive vulgar language. These students are trying to do just that. They're adhering to that. And all they're trying to do, I mean, they're certainly not changing the content, the material content of any communication that would come to them, either an advertisement or an article or a letter, because all they would be doing is, you know, maybe essentially the equivalent of bleeping out the word, maybe R dot dot dot, or, you know,
right,
just instead of saying Redskins, saying the football team or the girls soccer team. They're not changing the content of the communication. So our view is, for all those reasons, that argument doesn't hold a lot of water.
Well, I think two things to emphasize there too. I mean, point one, you're quite right. If a student were to confront another student in the hallway and say, "You Redskin,"
mm-hmm,
that would be a violation,
mm-hmm,
of the school disciplinary code. And so the very same word that is being forced on these students is a word that, in many other contexts inside of the school, would constitute a disciplinary offense. The other is, you know, if you take the school's argument at face value that the editors are prohibited from changing any wording that is submitted by anyone who submits an article, then all editing would cease, right? A student would,
mm-hmm,
have a First Amendment right to have the article published as is, unchanged, and with no editing alterations, which certainly can't possibly be the case. It would be a dramatic sea change in the way that newspapers have been running since the invention of newspapers. So that certainly
exactly,
doesn't
exactly
seem like it could practically be right. Yeah. So Jillian, I guess sort of bring us up to date here. As we're talking, it's right at the end of January. And so where do things stand right now? You have an issue, I guess, that either has gone to press or is about to. Where do things stand?
Right now, we are sort of just like in a limbo. We're sort of waiting for us to receive something with the R word in it, and then have to say that we will not be publishing it, just as our letter of advocacy from Gail and Catherine from Levine Sullivan stated all of those points that she has just spoken about and given it to the district to see that what they are doing is unconstitutional and goes against a lot of our rights. And so right now we really are just sort of waiting for them to tell us that we have to publish it. And they're already aware that we will not be doing that. And also, we have a great issue that will be coming out on Valentine's Day that I'm very excited about. So that's pretty much where we are for now.
Good, good. Well, you know, and I should have asked too. You know, this is that very unusual case involving high school journalism that did sort of catch fire among the general public and the professional news media. It was featured on Keith Olbermann's show. Even it has gone both across the news and the sports media nationally. And how is that going over? I guess with the students on the PlayWiki and staff, how do they feel about being the center of attention that way?
It is. Everybody just thinks it's so cool, but at the same time, it's awesome to see that just kids from high school can be recognized, and how much support we've received nationally from so many people. Giving us a pat on the back that we are doing the right thing here. And that's really what all of the student editors want to hear. Because, I mean, it was sort of scary in the beginning when people were just ripping up the newspaper that we just spent so many hours putting together just because they thought that we were trying to change the mascot. And so getting all of the support and all of this love back to us is just it is so great for all of the editors.
Yeah, and I will say, too, this is not something that we always invariably see when there is a censorship controversy at the school level. There are, unfortunately, times when people in the professional news media will, for reasons that seem quite mystifying to me, identify with the authority figures doing the censoring rather than identifying with the journalists. So it has been quite gratifying to see the outpouring of support from the professional news media to include, am I right here, Jillian, that actually your community newspaper, your local community newspaper, mm-hmm. following the lead of the students, has decided that it will no longer use the taboo R word to refer to the sports teams either, correct?
Yes, exactly. And they actually, in their editorial, it's the Bucks County Courier Times, and in mm-hmm. their editorial stating, and all of their sister newspapers, that they will... in their editorial, they stood up for us, actually, saying that they were going to take out the word just as we are, and that the administration should back down, and that we do have the right to do this.
And well, it's wonderful that you were able to... It's wonderful that you were able to inspire that much change, even to show leadership that has professionals following your lead. Well, Gail, let me sort of let you wrap this up. We heard from Jillian about mm-hmm. where the newspaper stands. Where does this stand as a legal matter? We have a little bit of a sort of an unjoined or maybe unresolved issue here, right?
We stand at our respective ridges looking at each other. we wrote the letter. We have not had a response to the letter yet. I hope we will soon. I expect we will. It really depends on the administration and what, you know, really the ball is truly in its court. And so I don't know where we are at this moment, but I know we're not doing anything yet. We're waiting. But I just wanted to add that I don't know if you're aware, but this month, the U.S. Trademark Office decided that it wouldn't register anything with the Redskins trademark and found it to be derogatory.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
I mean, it seems to be spreading, and it's gratifying. I do want to say that, you know, these kids, from our looking through what they've done here and kind of analyzing it, have displayed remarkable maturity and dedication to doing something that they really truly believe in and doing it correctly. And I mean, it really, you know, even the principal has nominated Jillian for a journalism award here. It's a very interesting situation in which I think what really stands out to me is the conduct of these students, and, you know, they should be admired for it, I believe.
Well, we certainly add our congratulations to Jillian and everybody at the Playwickian for their fortitude and for the deserved recognition that they are getting. And we'll be following this case, and our thanks, too, to everyone at Levine Sullivan, especially Gail Spruill, for jumping in on a volunteer basis and giving countless numbers of hours on a hurry-up basis, too, without hesitation to come to the rescue when the students needed somebody to come to their defense. So I want to thank you both, Jillian McGoldrick and Gail Spruill of Levine Sullivan, for being with us on the SPLC podcast. And for those who are interested in this story and want to learn more, please follow the news items on the SPLC website. That's www.splc.org. You can follow us on Twitter. It's just at SPLC. Join our group on Facebook. And if you have any question at all about your legal rights as a journalist, get in touch with us at 703-807-1904 or SPLC@splc.org. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next month.